Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation
with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, about 9 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater. This is program 259 in the series. It is February 18th, 2018, and to my right, we have the vivacious and effervescent Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
What's up, Carl?
Hey, Roger, I have a quick question for you.
Yeah.
So she stole a lozenge out of my bag.
That's incorrect.
Thief?
Wait a second.
Thief?
Go back. Did I steal something out of your bag?
She stole one of my lozenges.
I stole it.
She stole it out of my bag.
Did I touch your bag?
And
wait. Go back. Let's be clear. Did I go to your bag?
I want to hear the accusation first. Let him finish.
Okay. Well, yeah, she jumped
He's
in.
He's lying.
She stole one of my lozenge out of my bag.
Right.
And it was, I saw it sitting there. She stole it. Didn't ask me for it. Huh. I took it back. And so then she said, "Where's my lozenge?" I said, "It's not your lozenge. It's my lozenge. Uh-huh. You stole it." Right?
Well, Roger, do you want to hear the other side?
No, she can have it.
Okay,
back.
Can I hear the...
I don't care.
Yes.
She can have it.
Sitting on the desk, sitting on the desk right between us was a baggie, not like his...
My baggie not of lozenges.
Excuse me, my turn.
Please.
Not a bag like a, you know, like his...
Just a plastic bag.
Just a plastic baggie,
yes.
A Ziploc,
okay.
Full of lozenges.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought it might behoove me to have one prior to me talking on the air.
Without asking.
So
I
took a Halls, but now I'm not going to share my apple slices with him.
So let me boil this down. She does something wrong,
yes.
And then I don't get any apples out of it.
Let me.
That's right.
Let me see if I have this correct now. So there has been no final theft. There has been no taking of a lozenge.
She took it,
but I took it back.
But you have it back.
Well, because I took it back.
So there is a zero net gain there for her.
True.
And there's a zero net loss for you.
Oh, true. No, he's going to lose because I'm not going to share anything with him tonight. He loses.
Case closed.
There
I don't get any apples now. All right. Well, you know what? This particular incident could be on the big story. That's our first radio show because that was all, you know, kind of newspaper dramas.
Yeah.
And we have that for you. Then Duffy's Tavern, one of my favorite comedy shows of all time. You're going to laugh till your sides hurt on that.
Yeah.
And then Philo Vance Detective, and it's all brought to you by Cat's Pride. Now we're going to play our new game, which is Cat's Pride, Crack the Quote. Lisa, what movie is
it? The movie is American History X.
Oh, great movie. All right, call us right now, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We'll take the second caller. What do they win, Lisa?
They're going to win
one of my lozenges?
Gosh, I wish I had one right about now. Darn. Pair of tickets to Bunny, Gilda Radner, a sort of love story, playing right now at Mercury Theater Chicago.
All right, we'll play the game right after these words.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
We've got Chris on the line. Hey, Chris.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. Glad to have you with us. The movie is American History X. I don't know if you saw it or not. Either way, I've got three quotes from the movie, but only one of them is correct and actually from the movie. And your job is to tell me which one it is, okay?
Okay, I have seen that film.
Oh, good. This should help you out. Maybe. Okay, maybe. Number one, the American flag is a symbol of our freedom, pride, and history. Number two, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. Number three, on the Statue of Liberty, it says, give me your tired, your hungry, your poor. Well, it's the Americans who are tired, hungry, and poor.
Hmm.
Sorry, I didn't make this too easy for you.
Wow. What do you think?
I think it's either B or C, and I'm going to go C.
C, the last number three.
That's my second choice.
All right.
So I'm going to say number one.
Okay. Well, one of you is correct. Mm-hmm. All right, Shantae, help us out.
On the Statue of Liberty, it says, give me your tired, you're hungry, you're poor.
Chris
well, it's
got
Americans
it.
Who are tired and hungry and poor.
And there you go, Chris. You got it. You are a winner. Carl, wah, wah. So sorry. But, Chris, I am so happy to give you two tickets to Bunny, Gilda Radner, A Sort of Love Story. This is a tribute play to Gilda Radner. It's playing right now at Mercury Theater Chicago. It's gotten great reviews. I hope you enjoy the show.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank
Way
you for
to go,
playing
Chris.
And doing a great job.
He wasn't fooled by you, Lisa.
No, he wasn't. That's okay. I want him to win. I just don't want you to win.
I know you don't
so
want
all,
me to win.
It's all good.
Good job, Lisa.
Thanks, Carl.
All right. Well, our text in line, folks, is 312-981-7200. We love getting your texts. It keeps Lisa up. She doesn't fall asleep then when
that
you text
definitely
in.
Definitely keeps me
you
busy.
You know? So do text us. We love getting your texts. And we're going to start things off now with a big story. This was a crime drama that came to radio in 1947, lasted all the way to 1955. It featured dramatizations of true stories of real-life newspaper reporters. It was a top-rated show. Each week, the program recognized the reporter who wrote the story, and he or she received 500 smackaroos. That's a lot of money back then. $500.
You know
bucks.
What? Right now, it sounds like a lot of money right now.
It was sponsored by Pall Mall, and Bob Sloan was the narrator on this show. It made a television transition in 1949, which lasted till 1957. So we have a great radio episode for you now called The Dictionary and the Telephone Lead to a Killer. It's from December 6, 1950. Here's part one of The Big Story.
The Big Story.
Hello, Denver. Rollinsville's still waiting. Thank you. Go ahead, Mr. Beckwith. There's your office.
Night desk, Beckwith.
Hiya, Bernie. Where you at?
Rollinsville, back on the hills. Listen, in the middle drawer of the desk, you'll find an envelope marked hold.
Yeah? Yeah, got it?
Good. Open it, read it. It's a story I've been working up on my own time.
What the heck?
Listen, there are only two phone lines into Denver from this town. One is being held open for the police. The other I'm holding starting right now. If this comes through, it'll be exclusive. Now start reading that story. I'll hang on here. Any questions as you go, ask me.
Okay, okay. What are you waiting for up there?
The end of the story. If it comes, it'll be murder.
Denver, Colorado. From the pages of the Denver Post, the story of a reporter who sewed up a telephone line to lock up a killer. Denver, Colorado. The story as it actually happened. Bernard Beckwith's story as he lived it.
This one, you, Bernie Beckwith, reporter for the Denver Post, have been piecing together on your own time. And now, it's ready to pop. You're holed up in the one long telephone exchange of Rollinsville, waiting. You've sewed up the only remaining trunk line into Denver, just in case the opposition gets wind of the story and tries by phone to cash in on your work. But the operator's got something to say about that.
Mr. Beckwith, I can't hold a line open for you unless you actually use it.
But he's got the whole story in the office, operator. I'm just waiting till the police come back.
I'm sorry. I just can't hold a line open for you.
All right. I'll talk. What's that book there?
The dictionary.
Okay, let me have it. I'll keep this line busy, all right. Here goes. It isn't much of a story, but... A, the first letter of the English alphabet and one of its five vowels. One... Any, same, some particular kind of, as a stone.
Yes, you'll keep it up all night if necessary to keep this line open. It wasn't much of a story when you started. Just a little notice on the official police bulletin.
Missing persons, Betty Gray, female, Rollinsville, Colorado. Age 24, 5'1", 126 pounds, medium build, etc., etc. Hey, Sarge, got anything on this Betty Gray?
Ah, husband reported her missing. Routine, Bernie.
Well, say, if she lives in Rollinsville, how is it her husband didn't report it to the sheriff up there instead of down here in Denver?
Beats me. Why don't you go ask him yourself?
That's not worth the trouble. But give me his name anyway.
Paul. Paul Gray. He's a carpenter.
Paul Gray. Okay, Sarge, thanks. So long.
By coincidence, a week or so later, you run into the sheriff of the Rollinsville area, down in town on a case. Not meaning much, not expecting much, you ask him...
Paul Gray's wife turn up yet?
Betty? What do you mean, turn up? Isn't she still in Chicago?
Chicago? She's supposed to be in Chicago?
Well, sure, visiting her sister.
Who says so?
Paul.
You know him?
Sure, all my life.
Oh, okay, skip it. Chicago, huh? Just tell me this one thing, Mr. Gray. Why didn't you tell your friend, the sheriff, your wife was missing? Why did you spread that story about her going to Chicago to visit her sister?
Well, you know how it is. A man doesn't like to go advertising to his friends around his own hometown that his wife's run out on him.
Yeah, that's natural. Just one little thing more, Mr. Gray. What was your wife wearing when you saw her last?
Well, I was never one much for noticing women's clothes, but sort of a blue coat, blue shoes, pocketbook is black.
Hat?
Yes, sir, she... Where does the feather hat? Bought it on our honeymoon. That is only 5 months ago, you know.
Yeah.
5 months married. No. Yeah, the last thing I saw as the train pulled out of the Denver Union Station was that little feather hat.
What train was that?
Put her on the 410 for Chicago. Beautiful train, big, brand new Zephyr. California Zephyr, they call it. Got one of them swanky new cars with the domes on the roof.
Oh, yeah, yeah, the Vista Dome.
That's it, Vista Domes. Last I saw her. Well, maybe she'll have a change of heart and come back to me. I don't know. I can always hope, huh?
Well, it's a perfectly open story. That is, in the newspaper police sense, no story. But one day, about a few weeks after that, one of the men on the staff comes in from a lecture in Chicago.
Ah, nice trip, Bernie. Better than driving any day.
What'd you take, Larry? The Zephyr?
Yeah. The first time I'd ever been in one of those Vista domes. Of course, it was mostly a night ride, but you can still see some...
Night ride?
Yeah.
When does she leave Denver?
Zephyr?
Mm-hmm.
7 p.m.
You know trains, Larry. Does the 4 o'clock for Chicago have a Vista Dome? Does the 4 o'clock Zephyr have...
4 o'clock Zephyr?
Yeah.
Oh, such animal. There's only one California Zephyr through Denver, and that's at 7 p.m., and it's the only train passing through here with the Vista Dome.
Now it begins to look like a story, but not for the paper yet. Not till the police take over. So you point out the discrepancies in Gray's story to the Denver detectives. The lieutenant says...
Bernie, you're being too suspicious.
But just then, somebody turns up with a valise that was left in a locker at the Denver station around about the time Betty Gray first disappeared. The lieutenant opens it.
Woman's clothes.
Any name on the valise?
No. No way of finding out who left it. In the old days when they issued checks, it was easier. But now with these 10-cent-a-day keys, I... Hey, wait.
Laundry marks?
No, no, initials sewed on a blouse.
Oh, monogram, huh? Hey, looks like E-R.
Yeah, E-R. Betty Gray, E-R. No.
Just the same, I think it wouldn't hurt to call Gray in for questioning.
Okay. Will do.
They do. And Gray reels off the same story. She ran out on him. He chased her into Denver. Found her in a motor camp. Argued with her.
Finally figured it is best to give her own head and let her go away for a while. Put her on the train. Haven't seen her since.
You heard from her?
No.
Any idea what she might be?
Well, her sister's. Chicago, that is.
Ever write and try to find out?
Well, I... No.
Well, why not?
You know, I figure if I made out I didn't care too much, didn't write, she might kind of miss me, you know?
Mr. Gray.
Yes, Mr. Beckwith.
Do you recognize these clothes?
No, sir.
They don't belong to your wife?
Betty, no, sir. Where'd they come from?
Well, since they're not hers, it doesn't matter. But about this sister in Chicago, would you mind if we communicated with her?
Well, not at all. Betty sent a telegram from the station. Might have been to her.
Yeah, probably. And this would clear up the whole thing. What's her sister's name?
Ridgway. Martha Ridgway.
And your wife's maiden name was Elizabeth Ridgway. Not Betty, but Elizabeth. E-R. Okay, you take over, Lieutenant. It's yours from here on out.
The clothes were his wife's, all right. That he finally admits. And so, you finally have a story. Carpenter held in connection with wife's disappearance. Not held for, just held in connection with. Nothing really to go on, but the fact that she's gone. The fact that she's gone without her suitcase of clothes. And one other thing, an answer to a checkup in Chicago.
Martha Ridgway reports no word from Sister Elizabeth since January 1st, 1950.
And Gray says he put her on the train March 6th, and it's now May 10th. But that isn't all he says. He blurts out the rest of the pathetic details of his marriage to you and the lieutenant.
Well, from the first, it didn't work out so good. I had 21 years on her, you see. You know, a young woman living in a little town like Rollinsville, not much to do. I'm a stay-at-home. She was more of the get-up-and-go-out type, so we had our... So when she run out on me, I give her a head a while, then tried to persuade her to come back. But she liked it in Denver. So I agreed to let her stay in town for a while, gave her some money, and begged her at least to write to me. Let me know how she's getting along. It is the least she could have done.
And did she?
Sir?
Write to you?
Yes, sir, she did. A lot, too. She wasn't a mean girl, you know. She wanted me to understand her.
Do you have those letters?
Oh, yes, Lieutenant. Every last one.
And where are they?
Up in my cabin, hid away. They'd hate for them to come out. I mean, there's things in them.
What kind of things?
Private things, Mr. Beckwith, and a man's own private letters from his own wife.
Mr. Gray, speaking as a law officer, it's only fair to tell you that this has gone a little beyond the missing persons case. And for your own protection, I think you'd better let us see those letters, especially if they back up your story that your wife has left you, just left you. The fact is, Mr. Gray, it begins to look like murder.
He agrees to lead you and the law to the letters. You go along with the police to his cabin in the back hills of Rollinsville.
All right, now just where are those letters, Mr. Gray?
Why, I believe I got them in a mason jar in the pantry here.
Nope, not here. Right, come on, Mr. Gray, where are they? Or aren't there any letters at all?
Well, I got them, Lieutenant. I got them, but I just can't remember where exactly they... Well, they might be in this chest here. Or in this here little table. I keep things in this drawer.
Gray, put that down. Don't be a fool, Gray.
Look out, buddy, look out!
Oh, man, that's dramatic music right there, Lisa.
It's good.
That is some drama right there. On the big story from December 6, 1950, we'll get back to that in just a few minutes.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
I'm going to see if Bill Curtis will change that to with Carl Amari and Lozenge Stealer.
Okay, well, I'll take that lozenge stealer and I'll.
But you know, Roger, here's the thing: if she would have asked me,
it's not a stealer.
If she would have asked me for a lozenge,
you know
what do you think I would
have? I think it was fair game to have a baggie full of lozenges
she
on the table next
in
to
and
me.
Stole it.
I think it was sort of fair game to.
No,
to
she
share
didn't
it.
Steal it. See, there's a new legal term.
I gave it.
It's
I
called
gave it
sharing.
No, there's a new legal term. It's called a permanent borrowing.
Yeah.
I don't, honestly, it's just a baggie with an open Ziploc
she permanently borrowed it
on the counter next to me. So I felt like
so, Roger,
I didn't
did it
really
have his name?
Ask.
Did it have his name on
I
it?
I went
it
to
not.
Wash my
well,
hands.
There you go.
Right.
I came back and she purposely waited till I left the room to go in there.
Can you prove that?
See, yeah, this is getting worse. It's getting worse now.
I don't think so.
Let me ask you a question,
Roger. I would have done it right in front of him. I'm that brazen.
Hey, Roger, if I came up there into your into the news,
I got pulled in all this. So.
If I came up into the news hut,
yeah,
there,
right.
And I waited till you walked out, and then I went and I opened up one of your bags of food or something, and I took some food out of there
I'd make
without
sure
asking.
Take it. Yeah.
Okay.
I'd make sure you take
not,
it.
Not very nice, right?
Not only would he
not
give it to
nice.
You, he would want you to have it because it would make for a better show. You'd say, Carl, please take my lozenge.
Now.
If I could give something to you that would be useful, then it would make me feel good. That's what he would say.
And then
say.
I'd send him a bill
my
in the
point
morning.
Is... You could have a lozenge. All you have to do is ask for it. I'd be happy to give
well,
you one.
Well, then why put the bag next to me?
Figured,
why
you know.
Put a bag next to me? An open
I
baggie
didn't put the bag
next
it was
to
a plant.
Me.
It was
I didn't
a plant.
Put the bag
and then
next
say
to
I
you.
Can't have any.
Okay, so you're
clear.
Wrong.
It was a setup.
You're clearly wrong here.
I'm clearly right.
No.
And now I'm not showing
and
my
now
apples.
She's not going to give me any apples.
Yeah. Yeah.
She what, brought apples.
Was there a
Roger,
guarantee
would
you
like some apples?
I would love some apples.
I've got them right here. I've got so many
I'm
to share
to
now.
My apples.
They're all sliced up already, pre-sliced. Right.
Are you enjoying the big story?
Hey,
good crime
good
drama? Yeah.
Yeah.
1950. And let's see. This is, from December 6, 1950. A little later, we're going to tune into Duffy's Tavern from 1949, and one of the funniest radio shows of all time, Duffy's Tavern. And then a good detective adventure on Philo Vance from 1949. You know who played Philo Vance on radio? Jackson Beck. You know that name?
Beck, no.
He was the announcer on Superman. And he would be like, "Now the adventures of Superman." And, you know, I interviewed him one time. It was really funny. I said he was at one of these conventions, and I walked up to him, and I said, "Mr. Beck, could I have 5-10 minutes and interview you?" He said, "Sure. What's this for?" I said, "Oh, it's just, you know, just I'm a big fan of classic radio." Mm-hmm. And he went in his wallet, and he pulled out his AFTRA. Actually, it was AFRA. It was not AFTRA at the time.
Because there was no TV.
He had his AFRA card. Mm-hmm. And he was number two.
Wow.
He was the second person ever to join AFRA.
Who was
That's
number
amazing.
One, do you know?
I don't know who number one is. Maybe it was William Paley.
That's an honor.
Nah, he wouldn't be a union.
No, I know.
Could have been Jack Benny.
Yeah, he was number two. It was really interesting to see. He kept it for all those years, you know, from the early 30s or whatever, that AFRA was AFRA. AFRA.
Cool. People don't understand what it's
the American Federation of Radio Announcers. Yeah, and then of course when television came in, then they added the T.
Right.
All right, let's get back now to the big story.
This is Cy Harris returning into your narrator and the big story of Bernard Beckwith as he lived it and wrote it.
You, Bernard Beckwith of the Denver Post, had worked up a story on your own time. A story for whose ending you are now waiting by an open telephone line. You'd started with a woman reported missing by her husband, managed to persuade the police to question him, and had gone with him and them to his cabin in Rollinsville. And there, he pulled a gun from hiding.
Look out, buddy, look out! Look out yourself. He wasn't shooting at me. Grab that phone, get a doctor. The poor jerk's killed himself.
No, not killed himself. Just creased his own head. Funny how they can miss at such close range. Now he lies in a prison hospital while you and the law wait outside and second-guess the whole deal.
That's all my fault, Bernie. Should have guessed it had a gun hidden there.
Oh, not necessarily, Lieutenant. We really had nothing solid on him.
I got a weird idea it was a grandstand play.
How's that?
Well, if he really wanted to kill himself at that range, he couldn't have missed. No, I think he'll come to and ask to see you, then start spinning some yarn about
him. Oh, how's it going, Doctor?
Fine, just a scratch.
Can we see him?
Can you? Why, the first coherent thing he said was, let me talk to the law.
Bernie, you're batting 1,000. Well, come on. Let's see what he comes up with this time, huh?
The minute this reporter come asking questions, I knew it was just a matter of time before I'd get caught. So I want to tell the truth. Everything else was lies. This is how it really happened. After so much fighting and squabbling those first 5 months we was married, I finally agreed it is best for us to break up. We got in the car and I agreed to drive her as far as the hotel in Denver. But instead I kept on going south.
Paul, you keep passing motor camps. Aren't you going to stop?
Not for a while, Betty. Not for a while.
Oh, but you promised.
I know. Honest, I'll stop. Believe me.
Every time you say that, I start not believing you. I wouldn't be in this mess if it hadn't been for you, if I hadn't have believed you. You and your lies about Denver being a hot little town.
Well, now...
And all the time it was Rollinsville you lived in. Yeah. And your big contracting business.
Oh, honey.
And all the time, we're just a little old carpenter. And you're lodging in the mountain.
Oh, baby, it's
and
a
all
night.
The time it was that crummy old shack.
Believe me, dear.
Believe me. I wouldn't believe you if you said it was snowing and I was standing in the middle of a blizzard. Now, when are you going to stop and let me off?
Colorado Springs, honey. Colorado Springs.
Where are we going? When are you going to let me off?
Pueblo, baby. Pueblo.
When are you going to let me off? Where are we going?
Las Vegas, sweetheart. Las Vegas.
Look, I'm sick and tired of this. Driving all day, arguing all the way. Lying. The way you're behaving. If you don't let me off at the very next stop, the very next town, I'll never come back. Where are we anyhow?
Albuquerque. Just across the Rio Grande, and we'll be in Albuquerque.
All right. Albuquerque it is. But no farther.
I never took her into Albuquerque. I never meant to. All that driving was just to get up my nerve. When we come to the Rio Grande, I said to myself, that's the place. So we crossed the bridge. I pulled off the road. She started nagging me again, and I choked her. I choked her to death.
Her body?
In the river.
She was wearing?
Blue dress, blue shoes, black pocketbook.
Hat?
No.
No feather hat?
Feather hat. Oh, yeah. The little feather hat, yeah.
Lieutenant, could you come over here a minute, please? What do you think?
Your first hunch was right. He killed her.
Yeah, but he's a very smart cookie. Dumped the body in the river, he says. Don't you see? He knows there's no case without a corpse, a valise full of clothing. That's not murder evidence. You need a body.
See, the Rio Grande. Albuquerque could drag...
Listen, that was 3 months ago, before the spring flood. They won't find anybody. But I've got an idea.
Go ahead, try it. What do we got to lose?
Mr. Gray.
Yes, sir, you want me to sign that confession?
Later, Mr. Gray. Just a couple of little questions first. Now, the bridge. You said you drove over the bridge.
That's right. It is on the other side, the Albuquerque side.
All right. Now, we're going to check that, of course, on... And it would help if we knew where to drag for your wife's body. If you could actually prove you crossed that bridge. Now, the toll taker, the man in the booth who takes your toll, is there any reason he might remember
you? The man in the booth?
Uh-huh.
No, I don't think he would.
Well, did he say anything? For instance, like, thank you, or nice evening, or...
Yes, thanks, he said. Thanks, sure. Not that I really remembered, you know, but now you mention it, of course he said thanks.
Then you drove on.
That's right.
And off the bridge. Now, left or right?
Oh, let's see.
We're just trying to find out where you pushed her body in. I mean, above the bridge or below.
Oh, yeah, well, let me see. It is...
There's a turnoff to the right down the river road.
That's right. Right. We turned right off the bridge to the right.
And there, you choked her to death and pushed her into the river.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mr. Gray.
You're welcome. Any other information I can give you, I mean, now it's off my chest, I'll be glad to cooperate. Anything you
want
to know.
There is one thing we want, Gray. The truth. For change, the truth.
But that is the truth. I admit everything else is lies, but...
Never mind the buts, Gray. There's plenty wrong with this truthful story of yours. In the first place, there is no toll on that bridge. Not since 1947. And in the second place, there's no River Road turnoff anywhere near the bridge. Now, come on, Gray. Let's have the truth.
All right. The truth is I killed her.
That we know. But where's her body?
It's up in the hills. I buried her back in the hills. All the rest is lies. I killed her in the hills, and I buried her there.
You're sure it was right here?
Yeah, Lieutenant, right here, I'm sure. It is by this creek. I mean, the creek wasn't running yet, but I buried her right here.
You didn't find anything, boys?
No. This ground's never been dug up. I'll lay to that. It's all rock.
But I'm sure it is right about here. Right here.
You were sure about the other two places, too? The creek bottom, the rock outcrop?
Well, no, it is here. I'm sure. Just that tree. I remember that tree.
All right, boys, what do you say?
Another wild goose chase.
We keep this up, we won't find no body. We'll find gold.
Gold. The magic word rings a bell. Gold. These hills are pocked with mine working. Gold. You try one last hunch, one last gambit in this crazy stalling game this crazy killing husband is playing, leading the law all over the lot.
Mr. Gray.
Yes, sir?
A couple of notes for my story, if I ever get around to writing it. You're a native of these parts, huh?
No, sir. I'm from Utah way.
Oh, I see. Came up here as a prospector, maybe?
Me? Mm-hmm. No, sir. I never had the gold fever, but I made my living off those who did.
As a carpenter?
Yes, sir, as a carpenter. I let the other fellows dig for the stuff. I built their shacks and their houses.
And their shafts?
And their shafts and their offices and all that. But if you want to put me down as a gold prospector, if it'll make your story any better...
Okay, Mr. Gray. Thanks. You've helped a lot. Lieutenant.
What is it, Bernie?
Forget the shovels. Try one of those old mine shafts. I know there are hundreds, but try them all.
Do you know, or is it a hunch?
Both. There is a body. It's down a mine shaft. I'll lay to that.
They take off, determined to check every mine shaft in the Ward Rollinsville area, if it takes all night. And now you, Bernard Beckwith, a holdup in Rollinsville's combined telephone exchange police station, holding the wire open to your night desk, determined to keep it open until they come in with the end of your story. That is, if they come in with the story. And if you have to read the dictionary over the phone from now till doomsday.
Averse, unwilling, not favorable to, turned away from the principal axis. Aversion,
Bernie.
Dislike, an object of dislike. Avert.
Hey, Bernie, huh? Bernie.
Oh, hi.
Hey, take a look at this. Wait, I'll unwrap it.
Uh-oh. Did he identify?
He didn't have to. He admitted to you twice she was wearing it, didn't he? A little feather hat with a bullet hole in it.
Yeah. Hey, Desk, I'll give you the lead in a second. Okay, Lieutenant, where was the body?
Like you said, down a mine shaft. The old dewdrop mine.
Hey, that's my phone. You can't take it. I've been holding that line to tell them that...
Hey, quiet a second. Hello, Desk? This is Detective Higgins of the Denver Police. Here's another angle for your story. Put this in. Your man Beckwith 8 was so invaluable through this investigation.
Oh, listen, let me get my
Without
story
him, the investigation might have bogged down. What? Well, yes, you certainly can quote me.
Now we read you that telegram from Bernard Beckwith of the Denver, Colorado Post.
Killer in tonight's big story, finally signed 17-page statement of true story of wife's murder. He pleaded guilty, waived jury trial, and was sentenced to 50 years to life, from which there is no appeal.
In order to protect the names of people actually involved in tonight's authentic big story, the names of all characters in the dramatization were changed with the exception of the newspaper reporter. The Big Story has been a presentation of the United States Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education.
That is The Big Story, December 6, 1950. Dictionary and telephone lead to a killer. Hope you enjoyed that. Let's take a break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, it's 7 minutes after midnight here. It is Monday morning. It's hour two of the WGN Radio Theater. My sidekick, Lisa Wolf, is here, and she did share her apples with me, Roger. So we've made up.
Under threat?
Yeah, no. We've made up. We're best friends again.
You have? Oh, yeah. Did you give her a lozenge?
Oh, yeah. I gave it to her right away after
Boy,
she
did you
stole
give
it.
It to her.
She
yeah.
stole it,
oh,
and
no,
I gave it back to her.
Just so we're clear, I did not steal it.
Right.
It was meant
she
for us
it.
To share.
She borrowed it.
Everything we
you guys
bring,
share so
we,
much.
We share yeah. a
yes.
lot.
But I won't
yeah.
go in your bag and share
I
things.
I did not
with you.
Touch your personal bag.
And
wow. And I thought you were such a giving person. She's
he used to be giving. He's gotten a little ratchety in his old age.
Really? My best friend over here stole a lozenge from me, and then
it's not stealing if she's your best friend.
She's my
exactly.
best friend.
Exactly,
she's my best friend.
You know what? If
so.
You're a best friend, it's not stealing.
You know what, Lisa?
Oh.
You can have another one. You want another
oh,
lozenge?
Look at that.
That's how much I like you. I'm going to give you two lozenges.
No, I don't want it anymore.
Don't throw
them at her. I don't want it anymore. It doesn't taste good
anymore.
You can
have one for tomorrow. You can have one for tomorrow.
Yeah, it's a little sour now.
Okay. In this hour, it's Duffy's Tavern, one of the funniest comedies of all time. 1949 is the broadcast date on that. That's coming your way. But first, we're going to play our game, Cats, Pride, Crack, the quote. What's the movie, Lisa?
The movie is Psycho.
Ooh, Psycho.
Yep.
Right. So let me think here for a second. Okay. What do they win?
Oh, they're going to win two tickets to the Gilda Radner tribute. It's called Bunny Bunny, Gilda Radner, A Sort of Love
okay.
Story.
Okay, you can start calling now, 312-981-7200. Three quotes from the movie Psycho, 312-981-7200. We'll take the third caller, and we'll do that.
It's time now for Crack the Quote. Brought to you by Cat's Pride.
All right, Lisa.
All right, we have Terry on the phone. Hi, Terry.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. Where are you calling from?
Romeoville.
All right, we're glad you're on the line. The movie is Psycho. I assume you're familiar with
it. No, there's
the movie.
A lot of Romeos that live there.
There's a lot of psychos that live there, too. we're glad you're playing. Have you seen the movie Psycho?
I have, but it's been a while.
Exactly. Same with me. All right. I've got three quotes. One of them is actually from the movie. The other two are
okay.
not. All right. You ready to go?
I'm ready.
Number one, do you have a vacancy? Oh, we have 12 vacancies. Number two, no rooms, no vacancies for you. Number three, one more vacancy. Good night.
What do you think,
number three.
Number three. All right.
That's my second choice. I'm going to say number one.
Okay. Well, one of you is right. Let's see who it is.
Do you have a vacancy?
Oh,
We have 12 vacancies.
Carl got you this time. It's tough. I won't make it easy on you, but it doesn't matter, Terry, because you are a winner either way. You've won two tickets to Bunny Bunny Gilda Radner, a sort of love story. It's playing right now at Mercury Theater Chicago, written by Gilda's lifelong friend and Saturday Night Live writer. It is a tribute play to Gilda Radner. I hope you enjoy the play very much.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Oh, and Terry, thank you for playing.
Do you have a Romeo to go to that play with?
I will find one.
All right, good. Enjoy it, Terry. All right. She's a big winner.
She
getting
is.
Getting to go to
it's
see a Gilda Radner play.
Yes.
I've been hearing great things about
Me
that
too.
Play.
Me too. It sounds like a
All
great
right, Lisa. All right, we'll play again in our third hour. What is the movie for our third
the
hour?
The third hour
movie? Oh, Raiders
movie?
Of the Lost Ark,
yes,
right?
Exactly.
Wow. All right. Fantastic.
Yep.
Time now, though, for Duffy's Tavern. This was a comedy series started on radio in 1940. And Duffy's Tavern was a flea-infested dive on 3rd and 23rd Streets in New York City, where the elite meet to eat. Ed Gardner played Archie, the manager. And Duffy was an absentee owner. He never showed up. He never entered the tavern. He just called in and checked on it. Duffy's man-hungry daughter, Miss Duffy, originally was played by Shirley Booth, Hazel.
I remember Hazel
on television.
Yes.
And then Florence Halep and Sandra Gould. Regular cast members, Eddie the waiter, Clancy the cop, there were often guest stars as well. Now, the writers included Abe Burrows. Now, Abe Burrows' son was, what's his name now? I'm trying to think. Abe Burrows' son was the creator of Cheers. Oh, gosh. What
oh,
am I thinking?
Right.
I'm having a senior moment.
Well,
now.
That's okay, because we've talked about the...
Jim Burrows. James
okay,
Burrows.
And we've talked about the similarities
yeah. I mean, the interesting
between Duffy's
thing
Tavern and
was,
Cheers.
Yeah, the main writer on Duffy's Tavern was Abe Burrows, and then his son ended up creating Cheers, which yeah. was, I think, a little bit based on what his dad
right.
used to write about.
Right.
Also, writers on this series, Larry Marks, Larry Gelbert, and Dick Martin of Rowan and Martin. So they had really great writers on this show. And in 1949, Ed Gardner, who owned the program, moved the entire show offshore to Puerto Rico for tax purposes. Saved a lot of money by
Sounds like
broadcasting
a lot of fun.
Out of... Yeah. on a Puerto Rican island. So, all right, time now for Duffy's Tavern from April 20th, 1949. On this show, they're trying to find Miss Duffy a groom. Here's part one of Duffy's Tavern.
Bristol Myers, makers of Ipana toothpaste for the smile of beauty and Vitalis for well-groomed hair, bring you Duffy's Tavern with our guest tonight, Cass Daly, and starring Archie himself, Ed Gardner.
Hello, Duffy's Tavern, where the elite meet to eat. Archie the manager speaking. Duffy ain't here. Oh, hello, Duffy. Tonight, Cass Daly. Well, she's sort of a Martha Ray, a Betty Hutton, and a... Judy Canova, all rolled up into a Marjorie Maine. Yeah, one of them hotshot dames, Duffy, full of vim, vigor, and vitality. In fact, they tell me that when a vitamin pill is feeling low, it takes one of her. And what a voice. You ought to hear her new phonograph record, All Right, Louie, Drop the Gun. Yeah, she sings it so loud, Louie could shoot the gun and nobody would hear it. What does she look like? Well, let me put it this way. You know them trick mirrors down at Coney Island? Well, on them, Cass Daly looks beautiful. Worse looking than your daughter? Well, it's hard to say, you know. It'd be kind of a Mexican standoff. Huh? Well, why do you ask that question? You think it's time Miss Duffy got married? I could have told you that 20 years ago. Huh? You want to put up a dowry of $500 to get her a husband? Really? Duffy, your daughter's got an agent. Did you hear that, Eddie? Duffy is offering $500 to get a guy to marry Miss Duffy.
Marry Miss Duffy? Well, that shouldn't be too tough.
You don't think so?
Oh, they split the atom, didn't they? Now, look, why don't you marry Miss Duffy and collect the money yourself?
Ah, no, Eddie, her and me ain't got enough in common. You see, I'm a man, and she's Miss Duffy. No, I don't mind a dame being homely-looking, but she makes a fetish of it. I wonder who we could get to marry her.
Yeah, she might be a pretty good wife for somebody.
Yeah, yeah, but who, though?
Well,
Let's see.
Well, guess that exhausts the possibilities.
But there must be some crackpot that'd marry it, though.
The only trouble is, if he's a crackpot, the chances are he's already married.
Well, that's true. Now, let's see. Who could we get? Of course, in a pinch, there's always Tommy Manville.
Not at Shaw.
No, I think he's already bagged his limit there. Besides, guys like that is too sophisticated and too choosy, you know. We got to get somebody, as I say, somebody more on the crackpot side.
What?
Oh, hello, Finnegan.
What?
Hello, Finnegan.
What?
I said hello. What are you trying to do?
Nothing, Arch. Just jockeying for position.
Eddie, I think this might be just the man. Finnegan... How would you like to get married?
Arch, I didn't know you cared.
Finnegan, I ain't speaking on my own behalf. Oh. What I meant was, how would you like to marry Miss Duffy?
How would you like a punch in the nose?
Now, just a minute. She ain't that bad. Besides, her father's got a lot of dough.
Oh, yeah? Then why don't you marry her yourself?
How would you like a punch in the nose? Why don't you think about it, though, Finnegan? You know, marriage might be a good thing for a guy like you. It might bring you a lot of happiness.
Arch, what good is happiness?
What good is happiness?
Yeah. Can it buy money?
Well, no.
Besides, me father has always been very much against me getting married.
He has, really? Why does he feel that way?
I don't know. Something about civilization.
I see what he means. But I still can't help feeling that there's something that, well, that you and Miss Duffy was meant for each other.
How do you figure?
Well, it's a cinch you two wasn't meant for anybody else.
Very sorry, Art, but you'll have to get another guy.
Yeah, but who? Who can I get?
Oh, wait a minute. You think she'd be interested in a dentist that owns his own Cadillac?
That could be.
A guy that has a yacht and about $1 million?
$1 million? She certainly would be. Do you know such a guy?
No, but I'll keep my eyes open.
And again, I think maybe it'd be better if you kept your mouth shut. Now, let me alone. I gotta get that $500 figure.
Yeah, well, if you're gonna get it, you better get it fast. That gal ain't getting no younger.
You ain't kidding. In fact, she's reached the age where she ain't even getting older. Hey, wait a minute. Ixnay on the conversation. Hey, here she comes.
Archie.
Oh, hello, Miss Duffy.
Guess what?
What?
I'm thinking of getting engaged.
Engaged? What'd you do, lie about your face? I mean, who are you, who are you engaged to? What's the guy's name?
Elmer.
That figures. This Elmer sounds like just the right man for you, Miss Duffy.
But you haven't even seen him.
No, but I've seen you. Tell me, what's Elmer's last name?
How do I know? We're not married yet.
Oh. Well, what makes you think that the guy's intentions are serious?
Last night I had to slap him 3 times.
He got fresh?
No, he didn't. You know, that's the thing about him, Archie. He hasn't tried to kiss me or make love to me. He hasn't even tried to hold my hand.
Well, then you're in.
What do you mean?
Already he's acting like a husband. You know, I think you better grab this guy off quick, Miss Duffy. You know, a dame like you don't get too many chances.
Oh, yeah. every time I've been proposed to.
Miss Duffy, being asked to play shortstop by the Pitkin Avenue Tigers can hardly be called a proposal. Now tell me, when are you going to see this Elmer again?
Oh, he's coming down here tonight.
Oh, good. Excuse me a minute. Eddie, could you let me have a $10 advance on that $500?
Now, wait a minute. Now, she ain't married yet.
She's as good as married. She says she's going out with him.
So what?
Any guy dumb enough to take that dame out is dumb enough to marry her. Eddie, it won't be long now. We get this Elmer guy to marry Miss Duffy and I collect $500.
Yeah, but getting the man to marry her ain't gonna be easy.
What do you mean?
Well, look at it logically. A marriage license costs $2, don't it?
Yeah.
Well, for the same investment, the man could get a license to marry Eddie Lamar.
Well, so what? Maybe Elmer wouldn't know the difference. You know, the old verboten, Eddie, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Hey, wait a minute. I think I got something in my eye.
Something in your eye?
Yeah, ain't that Cass Daly that just come in?
Well, it ain't Eddie Lamar.
Cass, welcome to the tavern. Yeah, let me look at you. You know, you ain't changed a bit.
Thanks, Archie. Let me look at you. You haven't changed a bit either.
Well, so much for insults.
So this is Duffy's Tavern, huh?
That's right.
You know something, Archie? Reminds me a lot of the inside of the Brown Derby.
Inside the Brown Derby, huh?
Yeah. A sweatband.
Like that, that's gonna bring back radio. Tell me, Cass, what's new in Hollywood?
Well, things are pretty bad.
Yeah, huh?
Yeah, you know, we actresses are beginning to feel the pinch.
What's new about that? But things are really tough out there, huh?
Yeah, Archie, you know, it's getting so bad in Hollywood that the agents are getting jobs for each other.
Yeah. They ever get them for anybody else? What have you got to worry about? You know, you're full of pep and vinegar. You'll always be successful.
Well, thanks.
Tell me, how do you get all that energy and vitality?
Oh, clean living.
What a price to pay for success. And from what you tell me, Cass, I guess I gave up my movie career in the nick of time. Looks like I'm just as well off being just a plain bartender.
You know something? That's what I could never understand, Arch.
Why?
Well, why you gave up a big movie career just to be a bartender?
Well, I took a long-range viewpoint. You see, I figured that long after MGM and Paramount have crumbled into the dust, they'll still be drunks. Another thing that I feel... Finnegan, this is Cass Daly.
Oh.
Cass, this is Clifton Finnegan.
Oh, I'm sorry. If I had known, I'd have sent flowers.
Just a minute, Arch. Who is this dame? What's her racket?
She's a singer.
Oh, some racket.
You've heard her. It so happens her success ain't only due to her singing, though, Finney, and she's very clever in a lot of ways.
Oh, yeah? Tell me, sister, can you hold your breath till your face turns purple?
No.
Can you recite Gunga Din backwards?
No.
Can you whistle Swanee River through your ears?
No.
Boy, you sure gone a long way with no talent.
Please, stop annoying the customers, will you?
Pardon me, Miss Daly, but didn't I see you in the snake pit?
Yes, Duffy, please.
Archie.
Yeah?
The one that just left.
Yeah?
Is this his brother?
Get her! Look, sister, you know, you're no Ray Milland yourself.
Wait a minute. Stop this argument here, girls. Hey. Hey, wait a minute. The one on the left should have a razor blade on her heels. Let me take a look at you two dames a minute. Them faces. Eddie, has the clock stopped?
Not only stopped, it lost the hour.
All right, that's the first portion of Duffy's Tavern from April 20th, 1949. Special guest Cass Daly. Let's take a break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thank you, Bill Curtis. Thank you, Esmeralda. And thank you, Roger Badish. We are in the midst of tuning into a very funny Duffy's Tavern radio show from April 20th, 1949. Special guest is Cass Daly. Let's tune in to the conclusion right now.
Well, this gives me an idea, though. Excuse me, girls. Eddie, take a gander at them two tomatoes. Look at them both at the same time.
Yeah.
You focused? Tell me, did you ever see Miss Duffy look better? You see, as Einstein says, everything is relative. So when Elma gets here, one look at Cass Daly and anything will look good to him.
You mean...
Yep, even her.
Now, look, fun is fun, Archie. How do I get out of this place?
Wait a minute, you can't leave yet, Cass.
Well, I have to. I'm sorry, I have an appointment at the beauty parlor.
That's the last place you should go. I mean, sit down and have a bite to eat. Keep your face around.
Me? Eat here? In this proving ground for ulcers?
Well, at least you can try. Here, look over the bill of fare.
Well, I guess I'm stuck. Okay. I think I'll start out with some oysters.
I'm sorry, but you're out of luck with the oysters, sir.
But it says right here on the menu, oysters.
I know, but we only got two of them, and we're saving them for breeding purposes. Perhaps our maitre d' can suggest something else. Oh, gargoyle. gargoyle. I'm talking to Eddie. Eddie, our guest is ravished. What would you suggest?
Miss Daly, how would you like some nice golden brown southern fried chicken?
Gee, you mean with candied yams covered with rich country gravy?
Yeah, hot biscuits and honey.
Boy, that sounds delicious. Have you got it?
No, but we were really living there for a minute, weren't we?
How about a hamburger?
Well, okay, let's get it over with. I'll take a hamburger.
Will you take it home or let it eat you here?
Eddie, please.
Well, here you are. One hamburger coming up.
Go ahead, Cass. Take a bite. Well, what do you think of it?
Well, I don't know whether it's a burp or a weenie. Here.
Where are you going? Wait a minute. You can't leave yet.
I gotta get out of here.
You gotta remember your public, Cass. You can't leave yet. A customer just requested a song.
Oh, really? Well, who requested it?
Some drunk. Sing something. At least sing something until Elmer gets here, huh?
Till Elmer gets here.
Well, that's an old expression around here. Let's sing till Elmer gets here.
Oh, yeah. I see.
Maddie, the music, please. Now, go ahead. Sing something,
okay,
Cass.
Okay, Arch. On. Okay, stand back. Here I go. Well, all right, Louis, drop the gun, boy. You're not fooling anyone. Get your horse and start to run. Yes. All right, Louis.
Yeah.
All right, Louis, drop the gun, boy.
How can she yell like that Louis with nobody beating her?
Go get down.
Yes, please.
Please,
stop,
please,
stop the music. Stop the music.
Look.
You see, it's nothing personal, Cass. Nothing personal, but that voice of yours, you see, this is a very old building, and... Have you anything a little softer?
A little softer?
Yeah.
Well, I might have. Listen.
Okay.
Now, here's a story with a moral. And all you gals better pay some mind. Because if you find a man worth keeping, be satisfied. Make sure to treat him kind. Because a good man is hard to find. You'll always get the other kind. Just when you think that he's your pal, you turn around and find him messing around some other gal. And then you rave. You even crave to see him laying right in his grave. In the morning, kiss him every night, give him plenty of loving, carry the ride, because a good man nowadays is hard to find. Yes, sorry, girls, you know, once I had a man of my own, yeah, and since he's gone, boy, I really miss him. You see, most girls have to kiss a man to hold him, but me, I have to hold him to kiss him. Pan. As a matter of fact, he wasn't much of anything, but at least he was a man. And if he comes back to my little bread shack, I'm gonna hug him in the morning, kiss him every night, give him plenty of loving, to read him right, because a good man nowadays is hard to find. Yes, sir, he sees an opportunity not for once. It's gone forever. So, girls, if you get a man, there's just one but. Keep a smile on your face and keep your big mouth shut. I've learned my lesson now and everything's fine. And if he comes back, I'll never, never step out of line. Cause I know what to do when the day is through. Gonna hug him in the morning. Kiss him every night. Give him plenty of loving. Carry him right.
That was wonderful.
Well, thank you, Archie. Now, let me get out of here.
Now, wait a minute. Kiss, please, please, come back, Kiss.
I'm sorry, no more arguments. This time, I'm leaving.
Look, you can't, Kiss. I'll come clean with you. You see, there's a guy coming down here tonight, an eligible bachelor, you see.
A bachelor? And a bachelor come down here tonight? Well, how peachy. What's he like?
Well, he wears pants, and he's alive.
Well, that's good enough for me, boy. And he trot out another hamburger.
You know something? Summer's just a bud and a breeze away. And to a lot of fellows, that means tennis, golf, swimming, and dry, unruly hair. Because that's just what happens when sun, wind, and water get working on your hair. But it needn't, you know. Not when you protect your hair with Vitalis and the famous 60-second workout. No hair preparation can give your scalp and hair better protection than Vitalis and the 60-second workout. For the Vitalis formula contains two of the same ingredients that many skin specialists prescribe for dry, flaky scalps. plus all the other extras that make your hair more handsome, more healthy looking. So try the Vitalis 60-Second Workout. Let it prevent scalp and hair dryness, rout flaky dandruff, and give you the best-looking, healthiest-looking hair of head you ever had. You look your best tomorrow if you get a bottle of Vitalis today.
Miss Archie, this poor Elma.
What do you mean, poor Elma?
Well, I don't think it's fair to a guy trying to get him married to Miss Duffy.
But, Eddie, she could make the guy happy. Just picture it. He comes home from work at night, and there she is, waiting for him with his slippers and his pipe and his blindfold. And she folds his paper and... Look what just arrived.
Archie, I'd like you to meet my new boyfriend. Elma, this is Archie.
How do you do, bub?
He could get B.O. plenty. Well, glad to see you, Elmer.
Thanks.
Have a cigarette?
Thanks.
Elmer, when you light it, be sure you don't hold the match too close to that collar. tell me, what do you do for a living, Elmer?
Elmer has his own farm.
A farm, huh?
Yep.
He raises hogs.
This I could have told you when he came in. Well, make yourself to home, Elma. What can I offer you? A beer, a bourbon, a bath?
Never touch him.
Tell me, Elma, this farm, is it a pretty big farm?
Yep.
Run it all by yourself, do you?
Yep.
Must get pretty lonesome sometimes, don't it?
Yep.
Especially nights.
Yep.
This guy sounds like Gary Cooper. Elma, you say you raise hogs?
Mm-hmm. Hogs, cows, chickens, horses.
Uh-huh. Elma, have you ever thought of completing this menagerie?
Archie, this is very embarrassing.
Now, look, young fella, be you hinting for me to marry this gal?
I do be.
Well, nothing doing. I ain't figuring on getting hitched.
Miss Duffy, get out of sight for a minute. I'll handle this. Look, Elma, what you need on that farm is a woman. A woman to cook your meals, put up the preserves, darn your socks, pull the plow.
Pull the plow? I got a horse for that.
Don't you ever feel that you'd like to give the horse a day off? And think of them hogs, Elma. Them hogs need a mother's love, too. Why don't you consider, Miss Duffy?
No, son, I'm getting on in years. I ain't got long to go. I think I'll just finish it out with the hogs. Besides, I always figured if I got married, I'd like to have something around the farm that looked better than animals.
But look at her over there, Elma. She's real healthy, you know. Good, strong set of teeth. Not too sway back. From what I hear, she ain't had a spavin in years.
Sorry, nothing doing.
Uh-huh. Well, I guess I gotta play me ace. Cass?
Yeah? Yes, Archie?
Come here a minute. Elmer?
Yeah?
You know how when you're in a cow pasture, the cow pasture on the other side always looks greener?
Yep.
Then when you get over to the other cow pasture, the first one looks better to you?
Yep.
Elmer, I'd like you to meet the other cow pasture.
Elmer, say, you're kind of cute.
Well, I'll take my crops and call me Dizzy if she ain't a looker there. Hey, sister, are you single?
Yep.
Hey, you think I'm kind of cute?
Yep.
Do you like farms?
Yep.
I like the way she talks.
Holy cat, I think I have created a Frankenstein. I got to break this thing up. Elmer, tell me, do you like good music?
Love it.
I thought you might. Kiss, why don't you sing a song to Elmer? You know, one of them nice square dance type of songs like Louie Dropped the Gun, you know?
Sure, well, all right, Archie. Do you like to hear me sing, Elmer?
Yep. Will you do it?
Yup.
Okay, Cass, let him have it.
Well, all right, Louie, drop the gun, boy. You're not fooling anyone. So get your hump and pull it down.
Hold on,
Louie, drop the gun. Hold on, Louie.
Power.
I knew that song would do it. Well, Elmer, what's new?
Well, Archie, I've made up my mind.
You're going to get married?
Yep.
To Miss Duffy?
Nope.
You mean you're going to marry Cass Daly?
Yep.
After hearing her sing that song?
That's just it. As I told you, I'm getting along in years, and my lungs ain't what they used to be. Someday I'm going to need a voice like that for calling hogs.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
That is Duffy's Tavern, broadcast from April 20th, 1949, Finding Miss Duffy a Groom with special guest Cass Daly, and that starred Ed Archie Gardner, as heard on NBC. Let's take a quick break, then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. All righty, Lisa, we are here every Saturday and Sunday from 11 p.m. till 2 a.m., bringing you all your favorite classic radio shows. And God, what are we playing next week when we come in here?
We are just talking
I'll be
about
here
that.
Next week, but then I'm off the following week, although the show must go on. Dave Plyer and Lisa Wolf will be co-hosting the WGN Radio Theater without me March, I think it's the 3rd and 4th. I believe it's the 3rd and 4th, yeah.
Right.
But next week, you know what, Lisa?
What, Carl?
I will be here.
Yes, I know that.
And you know, that's going to be the first time I've taken off in 3 years.
Well, you know, it's time. We'll have some new blood for a week, and then you come back.
Got a little traveling to do. Baby Snooks and Daddy next week. Oh, I love Baby Snooks and Daddy. Suspense, Barry Craig, Confidential Investigator. The Adventures of Michael Shane, Lights Out. And then Big Town, that's next weekend. Next weekend also Dan Jaffe and Dave Weiske will be here because they're going to give away another year's supply of Cat's Pride Kitty Litter, our main sponsor here on the WGN Radio Theater. Folks, now is the time. If you have not emailed your picture of your kitty cat, then you have to do it. You have this week to do it because that'll get you in the drawing. You will actually be in the drawing if you send in a picture. Right, Lisa?
Right, Carl.
What should they do?
You can send it in every month because every time you send it in, you resubmit for that particular month. We will be doing the drawing on Sunday or just after 11 o'clock. Send in a picture of your cat to catspridephoto@gmail.com. And please be sure to include your name, your cat's name, your city, and your state. That's it. Very simple. And then you will be entered to win an entire year's supply of Cat's Pride Kitty Litter, which is the best on the market.
Well, I don't have a kitty cat, but if I did have a kitty cat, I would love to win a year's supply of Cat's Pride Kitty Litter.
I share your sentiment.
My sister has cats. She has one cat now. She had more, but one passed away. But she's like, gosh, I send my picture in every month. And I don't
win. Tell her to send it in again.
Gotta send it in again.
Keep sending
Carlene,
it in.
Gotta send your picture in of the kitty cat.
We're talking to you, Carlene.
Yeah.
Carlene and Carl.
But what about your daughter has a kitty cat?
She does have a cat.
Does she send a picture in?
She has, but she should send it in again.
I don't think I don't think we could win. I mean, I keep telling my sister to send it in, but if Dan were to pick her, I couldn't. Sorry, sis. That wouldn't be right. That would not be right.
No,
your daughter or my sister would not.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be right.
They can send it in all they want, though.
I mean, they are regular listeners, though. But
they
it
sure
does.
Are.
I don't. I think that they're
a
not.
Little, yeah.
They're not qualified.
Wouldn't be kosher
to win.
There.
Yeah. No. Wouldn't work out. But people listening, no matter where you are listening to this, great station. And this station does beam pretty far, 40-plus states plus parts of Canada. Wherever you are listening, if you want to send in a picture of your kitty cat, send it to catspridephoto@gmail.com. We need also your name and your cat's name and your city and state.
I think I just said that.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
But I don't listen.
Do you like to repeat things?
Yeah, I'm
you
a repeater.
Do. You're a repeater.
I'm a repeater.
You are. That should be a Seinfeld, one of those Seinfeld-isms.
Yeah, I'm a repeater.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that would be a great...
Well, my middle name is Peter.
I know, but...
I'm a repeater.
Can't you see that as a Seinfeld episode?
Yeah.
She's a repeater.
Yeah. Well, as I said, my middle name is Peter.
That must be why.
Yeah. All right. So get that picture in, because next week we will be here. We'll be drawing out a name, and it could be you. You could be the winner. You could win a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter. How great would that be?
Yeah, it's a very valuable gift if you have a cat.
All right. And the last thing I want to mention before we go to news is our surprise boxes. If you have not purchased a surprise box, you are missing out, because everybody that has purchased a surprise box has loved it. We've gotten so many texts and so many emails. People have reordered. They placed, two, three, four times for different surprise boxes. And if you're wondering what I'm talking about, Lisa, why don't you tell the listeners about
it? So we have a great new program. You get to order a surprise box. There are three different boxes. One of them is classic radio on CDs. Number two is DVDs and classic TV. Movies and classic TV on DVDs. And number three is Twilight Zone audio dramas on CD. You can choose the one you like, and it is $39.99, and it includes over $150 of brand new product still in the cellophane, as you like to say. It's a whole compilation of great stuff, and we send it to you in a box, and it's hours and hours of enjoyment. Everybody loves it. If you're interested in classic radio, Twilight Zone, or DVDs or TV on, I said it again, movies or TV on DVDs, you will love our surprise boxes.
Yeah, and how do you learn about it? Just go to our website, WGNRadioTheater.com, WGNRadioTheater.com. When you go there, there'll be a pop-up, and it'll tell you all about it, and you can just read all about it and learn all about it.
Read all about it.
Yeah, read all about it. Yeah, I think you'll like it. Everybody that gets it is really, really happy.
It.
You get a ton of stuff in there for only $39.99. All right, in our next hour, we are going to tune into a good detective adventure on Philo Vance with the combination murder case starring Jackson Beck from 1949. That's in our next hour.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thank you, Esmeralda Leon, and thank you, Roger Badish. This is hour three of the WGN Radio Theater, and thank you for staying up late with us. It is 1:08 in the morning. This is program 249, right, Lisa?
Right, Carl.
We have a ton of podcasts up. How do people get our podcasts?
They can go to WGNRadio.com.
Yeah. Right.
And you go to shows, and all of our podcasts are there.
Wow.
Go to WGN.
Well, not all of them. I don't think
no,
all
they're
of them
not.
Are there.
Yeah. You're right. They're archived somewhere.
Yeah, they're
but the
somewhere.
Last big grouping of them, whatever
right.
that is.
You can sort of have as many of these shows as you want, though. There's a lot of shows there.
Yeah.
I mean, we've done 249 3-hour shows.
Yeah.
I mean, for the most part.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's an abbreviated version when there's sports.
Not too often, though.
Yeah. I mean, 249 3-hour.
It's a lot of airtime.
That's a lot of Carl and Lisa.
And we're still here.
Wow.
So that's a good thing.
Yeah.
They haven't kicked you off yet.
No. Philo Vance Detective, good mystery in this hour. That's coming your way in just a few minutes. But first, it's time to play Cat's Pride Crack the Quote. What's the movie, Lisa?
The movie is Raiders of the Lost Ark.
All right, you can call right now, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Call in, and you could win tickets, right?
Tickets to see Bunny Gilda Radner, A Sort of Love Story at Mercury Theater Chicago.
All right. Call us right now. We'll take the third caller, and we're going to play Crack the Quote. We'll do that right after these words.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
right. So the movie is Raiders of the Lost Ark, and we have Michelle on the phone. Hey, Michelle.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. Glad you're with us this morning, anyhow.
Hi, Michelle.
Hi, how are you? I listen to you guys
great.
All the time.
Oh. Awesome. Thank you so much.
Well, we're glad
Where
you
are
get
calling
to play.
From?
Sycamore.
All right. Good to have you with us,
Michelle.
Do you
Michelle. Know where that is, Carl?
Sycamore, Illinois?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Where?
Sycamore?
Uh-huh.
It's right next to...
DeKalb.
DeKalb.
Oh, don't
it's right
help
next,
him.
Yeah, no.
You didn't know.
No, yeah, I
he
knew that.
Know.
Right,
he
Michelle?
Did.
I knew,
he
right?
He did not know.
You
did not know. All right, well, let's see what we can do here, Michelle. I've got three quotes. One of them is from Raiders of the Lost Ark. Two are not. See if you can guess which one is, okay?
Okay.
All right. Number one, it's a transmitter. It's a radio for speaking to God. Number two, we're on a mission from God. Number three, my mission is not merely to survive, but to thrive.
I'll go with the last one.
All right, number three.
Oh, Michelle. I'm going to have to disagree with Michelle.
All right.
I don't want to.
Okay.
But I'm going to have to say one.
All right. Shantae, help us out. Which is it?
It's a transmitter. It's a radio for speaking to God.
Carl, you got this one right. Michelle, you didn't get it right, but you are still a winner here on the WGN Radio Theater because everybody who plays is a winner. We're so happy to have you with us. You have won two tickets to Bunny Gilda Radner, A Sort of Love Story. It's playing right now at Mercury Theater Chicago. It's a tribute play to Gilda Radner, so I hope that you enjoy that.
Oh, thank you very, very much.
Oh, thank
Way
you
to go,
for
Michelle.
In.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
All right. Have a great night. Thank you. Yeah, Michelle's a big winner. She's going to see Gilda Radner play. Fantastic. Hey, you know what, Lisa? I got two out of three right tonight.
You did. That was a big night for you.
And I got two out of three right last night.
You're on a streak.
So that's not too bad. No. I mean, two out of three is pretty good.
Yeah, but you weren't mentioning the week before.
Well,
that,
yeah, or... I kind of stunk it up the weeks
you
before.
Stunk it up.
But I'm trying
you're
to.
You're on an upward.
But
hill
I'm spraying
here.
Now. I've got good odor. Repellent.
Well, you could use some odor repellent right about now.
Yeah, all right. Really? I didn't know
it's
that.
Getting late.
Okay. Listen, I use my deodorant once
do
a
you?
Week, whether I need to or
what,
not.
What kind do you use?
All kinds. Mitchum.
Old Spice?
No, Mitchum and some other good stuff. Axe. That's another one
is that
I
a
use.
Good one?
AXE.
Yeah, yeah, I've seen it at Target.
Mm-hmm. All right, you ready for Philo Vance?
Yes, let's do it.
This was a detective series created by S.S. Van Dyne. I like that name. S.S. Van Dyne. It's very aristocratic, isn't
is it?
I think so. Philo Vance was in all kinds of books, movies, on radio. A very popular character. He was stylish and highly intelligent. He was a cultured private eye. And he was sort of like the Americanized Sherlock Holmes working out of New York. And you could see him in the movies, played by William Powell, Warren Williams, and Basil Rathbone. On radio, Jose Ferrer played him. And then in a syndicated version, which is the one we're going to listen to tonight, Jackson Beck played Philo Vance. And Joan Alexander was his secretary, Ellen Deering. Okay?
Okay.
All right. So we have a broadcast now from June 14th, 1949, called The Combination Murder Case. This stars Jackson Beck. Here's part one of The Adventures of Philo Vance.
Me, Jonesy.
All right, oh, Miss Dixon, right off. I'm finished with the lawn, anyhow. Oh, Miss Dixon, that young David Allen is in the house. He's been waiting for you. I saw him come in.
Let him wait. Do him good.
When I was a young fella, gal didn't treat a fiancé like that, no, sir?
Fiancé? You mean ex-fiancé.
Well, in that case, I guess it's different. I didn't know.
Neither did he till this morning. Where's he waiting?
Inside somewhere, miss. I'll just put the car in the garage.
Good enough. Take over, Jonesy.
Yes'm. Been pushing a lawnmower all day. Now I get to have something push me.
Now for a session.
That you, Joyce?
Yes, yes, it's me. I'll be right in.
There you are, Joyce. I've been waiting for you.
Whoever would have guessed. What's the matter? Didn't you get my letter?
Yes. Came this morning. First thing this morning before I left for the office.
Well, if you got my letter, what are you doing here? It said pretty plainly that you and I were washed up, didn't it? Because if it didn't, I'll tell you now. We're all washed up. Now beat it.
All right, Joyce, I'll go, but tell me why. What have I done?
Done? You haven't done anything wrong, if that's what you mean. Except for the fact that you have no money, and that doesn't matter because I've got plenty. You're perfect. You're good-looking, normal, and your nails are always clean. Nothing wrong with you except that you're dull, that's all.
So because there's nothing wrong with me, there's something wrong. Well, maybe there is something wrong with me. Something that you don't know anything about.
Oh, this I've got to hear.
Look, Joyce, I know where you get your money. I know that you don't own an honest dollar.
Why shouldn't you know that? You work for the man who takes care of my business.
You realize that all I have to do is tell what I know about where your money comes from, and you'll go to jail.
Oh, now we're getting around to blackmail, are we? Well, that's a point in your favor.
I'd never tell unless you make me, unless you do what you said you were going to do in that letter.
And then what?
Then I'll see to it that I'm not the only one that's hurt. Joyce, you've always had everything your own way. It's about time you were paid off. You've been getting away with murder all your life.
Oh, I have I? I've been getting away with murder all my life.
Yes, you have.
Keep talking, Alan. You're giving me an idea.
Good heavens, my boy. Stop sitting at your desk mooning. What if our beloved client decided not to marry you? Forget it.
I can't, Mr. Stone.
You know, there's a strange philosophy employed by young men. Unless they garb their thoughts in the deepest black when a romance is done, to their minds, the romance was not worthwhile. Come, boy, we have some figures to go over. Now, Miss Dixon's income for last week from the two gambling houses was... Now, let me see how much...
I'll answer, Mr. Stone.
Oh, sorry, lad. Can't have any of my clients hear that voice of yours on the phone this morning. They'll think things are desperate in this office.
Well, aren't they?
That, my boy, we shall discuss in a moment. Hello. Bartlett Stone speaking.
Mr. Stone. This is Jones, Miss Dixon's gardener.
Well, what is it, Jones?
Mr. Stone, I've been gardener to the Dixon family for 20 years. If Miss Dixon's parents were alive, I could go to them, but now I don't know what to do.
Come, man, what is all this?
Mr. David Allen, the young man who works for you, Mr. Stone.
Yes?
Last night, he and Miss Dixon had a terrible argument. After I put the car away, I heard them threaten each other, and... Well, Mr. Stone, they both sounded as if they meant it.
Oh, they both did, eh?
I kind of would like you to do something about that, Mr. Stone.
I definitely will. Thank you for calling, Jones. Goodbye. That was Miss Dixon's gardener, Allen.
So I gathered when you mentioned his name.
He said there was rather a serious quarrel at the house last night. I'm surprised that you lost your temper, my boy.
Look, let's not pretend any longer. Of course, you realize I know Miss Dixon owns a string of gambling houses. But I also know how you've been stealing from her. So, don't you try to be the big white father to me.
Allen, my boy, you surprised me.
Yes?
You surprised me greatly. And in the light of your remarks, perhaps I might relieve poor Jones' mind. He begged me to do something about your threatening Miss Dixon. You know, Alan, I think Jones has something there.
Come.
Mr. Markham?
That's right. Please come in.
Your secretary said it was all right. Come in.
Yes, she let me know you were coming. You're Miss Dixon.
That's right. Joyce Dixon. All right, sit down.
Please do. Allow me.
Look, Markham, let's you and I not kid each other. You're the district attorney, and you know a lot about me, only you haven't been able to prove anything, right?
Go ahead, Miss Dixon.
I came up to tell you a couple of things. One is that I'm selling out. I won't be operating after this week.
And the other things?
I'll take them in order. My money is being handled by a guy named Stone, Bartley Stone. You know him?
Vaguely.
Well, that's all anybody ever knows him. He's been stealing from me every week for I don't know how long, but I don't mind that.
You don't?
No, why should I? He runs my business, and he's stealing less than the next guy would, so what's the difference?
Mm-hmm.
But he's got a young kid working for him, a kid named David Allen. I was engaged to him until yesterday.
Nothing you've said sounds like a matter for you to come to me with, Miss Dixon.
I don't want any matter concerning me to come to you, Markham. Especially, I don't want you investigating my murder. See what I mean?
Oh. I wish you could stay a few minutes longer, Miss Dixon. My friend Philo Vance is expected here any minute, and there's nothing he likes better than to meet an intended murder victim.
Think I'm kidding, don't you?
No, I don't think so. But I think you know you've caused my office a great deal of trouble in the past, and, well, you're not exactly one of our favorite people.
That means it's okay for somebody to murder me?
Not at all. But the point is that...
Well, hello.
Vance, come in.
Thank you.
This is Miss...
Joyce Dixon. How do you do, Miss Dixon? I'm Philo Vance.
How do you know my name? We've never met.
No, that's right, we haven't. But your initials are on your handbag, the name Joyce is on that pin you're wearing on your blouse, and besides, Mr. Markham's secretary told me. What are you upset about, Miss Dixon?
Who says I'm upset?
You say it. Oh, not in words, but there's a bit of polish peeled from the index finger of your left hand. Women generally do that when their nerves are acting up. Not only that, but you undoubtedly left your home in a hurry.
Now, wait a minute, Vance. If there were anything obviously wrong with the way Miss Dixon is dressed...
Look, both of you, stop taking me apart. All right, so I'm nervous, I'm upset. I did leave my house in a hurry. Who cares? But how did you know, Vance?
A woman's curiosity finally triumphing over her sophistication. Miss Dixon, your makeup is very revealing. You neglected to use mascara on the eyelashes of your right eye. The other eye is made up perfectly. Either you were too upset to realize what you had missed doing, or too much in a hurry to leave, or both.
Okay, so it was both. Now let's stop this before you tell me what I had for breakfast. Look, Vance, I came up here to see Markham, but now that I get a look at you, I'd rather talk to you.
Well?
How'd you like to be my bodyguard?
Professionally.
What else?
I'm sorry, but I'm not interested. Now, Markham,
Let's say my escort.
Well?
I'm on a spot, Vance. Markham will tell you all about it. There are at least two guys who'd be happy to see me dead. And I've got an idea they're not the patient type.
Miss Joyce, if what you really want is protection, the police will supply that.
Skip it, Markham. I don't only want protection. I want Vance.
Hello, Joe's Diner.
Oh, hi. This is Dave Allen, apartment 3A in the boarding house on the corner. Can you deliver some food up here?
It's a little late, Mr. Allen, 10 o'clock.
Well, it won't take you a minute.
Okay. What do you want?
Get me some tomato juice, a sandwich of some kind, and a bottle of milk.
What kind of a sandwich? We got all kinds.
Oh, I don't care anything.
How about a combination sandwich?
Okay.
Have it up in 5 minutes. Tomato juice, sandwich, and a bottle of milk. Anything else?
Yes, but it's nothing you can do anything about.
I will have your table in just one moment, Monsieur Vance.
Thank you, Jacques. Well, Miss Dixon?
Having wonderful time. Glad you are here.
Thank you.
The show you picked out was real good, Vance. And this joint is real classy.
In any event, you have been safe all evening.
That I have.
Well, you've brought me up to date on your situation, Miss Dixon, but you haven't told me too much about your ex-fiancé, David Allen. How about that?
About Dave? Well, let's see. He's tall, blonde, wears heavy glasses, eats only what's good for him, salads, stuff like that, drinks milk all the time, and wears three-button suits, only he buttons all three buttons.
Oh, really?
You know the title?
Quite well. Sounds rather conventional.
That in itself is enough for me to dislike the guy. Oh, here's the head waiter.
Right this way, if you please, Monsieur Vance.
Thank you. Oh, excuse me just a moment, please. I'll be right there, Markham.
Markham, wonder what he wants.
Jacques, would you please escort the lady to my table?
My pleasure, Monsieur.
Don't be long, then.
You should have enough conceit to believe that I'll want to hurry. Excuse me, please.
This way, if you please, Miss Dixon. The table is right this way.
What is it, Markham?
Vance, I'm glad I found you. Your very efficient secretary told me you were here.
Her very efficient employer always gives her his itinerary, Markham. What's the matter?
Vance, David Allen, the ex-fiancé of the young lady you've been escorting all evening, was found shot to death an hour ago.
Really? Where?
In his room. From what we can gather, he came in at 10 o'clock and immediately ordered something from a place called Joe's Diner on the phone. At 10:15, the man from the diner found the door open and Allen dead.
Well, this started out as a pleasant evening. Now it's becoming an interesting one. I'm going to go to work on this case at once, Markham. and perhaps I'll get some food for thought at Joe's Diner.
See how clever that was? Maybe I'll get some food for thought at Joe's Diner.
I heard that.
I mean, that's some Academy Award winning writing right there.
Yep.
On Philo Vance, detective. I'm not making fun of it or anything. I'm just saying it's, you know.
It's a little cheesy, but
it's
it
a
works.
Little. But I kind of like cheesy stuff.
I know.
That's the Combination Murder Case, Part 1, from June 14th, 1949, starring Jackson Beck. He had a deep voice, that Jackson Beck.
Kind of like yours.
Yeah.
Similar.
About the same. All right, let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, Lisa, we have about another 25 minutes, and then we are out of here. But we'll be back next week, and when we come back, do you have the lineup?
I have the lineup.
What are
we
playing next week?
It's in my brain. We've got Baby Snooks and Daddy.
Oh, that's a good one.
I know you love that. Suspense.
Right.
Barry Craig, Confidential Investigator. That's Saturday night.
Right.
On Sunday, we have The Adventures of Michael Shane, Lights Out, and Big Town.
All right. So great lineup.
Great lineup.
Job, Lisa.
Thanks, Carl.
Way to go.
Oh, yeah.
All right. And don't forget, we have our website, WGNRadioTheater.com. We always have our schedule there posted. If you ever want to know what we're playing, just go there or pick up a Nostalgia Digest. Don't forget about that.
And, go ahead.
We have a schedule in there as well.
And we have a schedule on our Facebook page. I usually post it around Tuesday. Before the weekend.
That's because you sleep all day Monday?
I sleep all day Monday. Right. Tomorrow I'm going on vacation.
So
but
she's like, she gets up around 9 o'clock p.m. on Monday.
Oh, gosh,
and then
no.
She has to do some laundry and stuff. So then you post it on Tuesday,
doggy.
Right?
I have a doggy.
I appreciate that.
I have kids.
Actually, I can't. It's the weirdest thing. You know, I go to bed Monday through Friday.
You only go to bed Monday through
Friday?
Well,
what I'm saying is I go to bed around 11:30, maybe midnight, right? And I'm up at, 6:37, right? The latest.
Yeah, no.
On Saturday and Sunday nights, I don't get to bed till probably close to 4 a.m.
I know.
I'm still up at 7:30.
Yeah, no, not me.
I can't sleep.
I don't know
what it is in some internal clock that I have. I mean, I know you say that you can sleep till noon sometimes, right?
Oh, easily, yeah.
Really? I cannot do that.
I do.
It's weird. So then
what
I'm like dragging. I just have an internal clock. And then, you know what? Then I'm like kind of dragging.
Yeah,
so
I
then,
can see that.
But then I sometimes take a nap.
Yeah.
You know?
That's
like
important.
Monday, take a nap, something like that. I could use a nap right about now.
Well, I'm heading out to Florida today for a few days to visit my parents. But
you're flying out there?
I am.
Are your arms going to be tired by the time you get there?
Yeah. They're very tired already just from
whenever
thinking
I fly,
it.
My arms are always tired.
But I will be back before the weekend.
Yeah.
So
good. You're not going to miss the show.
Nope.
You're going to have a nice, it's supposed to be really nice in Florida, like 80-something
really
degrees.
Nice. Yeah.
Well, have a wonderful trip, Lisa. Safe trip. All right, let's get back now to Philo Vance, detective.
Only to me a thing like this happens. Only to me.
You realize why I'm asking you these questions.
No, I don't, Mr. Vance, and I don't care. Only to me does a thing like this happen. 10 o'clock, I'm ready to quit work, and I got to take an order from a guy who gets killed a couple of minutes later.
Now, let me get the facts straight. Mr. Allen called you at 10 o'clock.
On the nose. He orders tomato juice, a combination sandwich, and a bottle of milk, and he hangs up. Only to me does a thing like this happen. Then he gets killed.
Yes, and only to him did a thing like that happen. Well, thank you very much. I have an idea that what you've told me is very important, which makes it exceptionally important that I find out what it means.
Vance, there are too many things about this case I don't understand.
No explanations yet, Markham. That is, none that would satisfy you. Well, we'll find out in a moment about Mr. Stone. He's Miss Dixon's business manager, and David Allen worked for him.
Yes. Now, let's hope he's at home.
There's one way to find out. That's his apartment door.
I see what you mean. I don't hear anything from inside, Vance.
I don't either.
You know, it is possible that Mr. Stone isn't at home, even though it is 2 a.m.
Yes, it is. No question about it. It's also possible Mr. Stone took a sleeping pill, fell asleep, and is too drowsy to hear our knocking.
Oh, please, Vance, stop being so logical.
All right. I'm coming.
Oh.
Who is it making all that... Oh, the district attorney.
Hello, Stone. This is Philo Vance.
How do you do?
At some other time, under some other circumstances, meeting the great Philo Vance would indeed be a pleasure. Gentlemen, I've been asleep. I've taken a sleeping pill.
Vance figured as much, Mr. Stone, but we've got to come in and talk to you.
Very well. Come in. But if I fall asleep, it won't be the company. You understand that, my friends? Neither the company nor the hour. Merely the pill I took. Please come in.
Thank you.
And now, gentlemen, what is it that I can... That undoubtedly must be for one of you. It can't be for me at this hour.
Why not try answering it, Mr. Stone?
Excellent idea. Hello?
Hello, Bartley.
Oh, Joyce. What is it you want at this time of night?
Bartley, come over to my house at once before the police get here. My gardener, Jonesy's been murdered, and I've got to talk to you.
Oh, I see. Well, I'll call you later.
You can talk to her now, Mr. Stone. We could hear Miss Dixon very plainly.
The police are here now, Joyce.
Oh.
I'll be right over. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
So Miss Dixon's gardener has been murdered. I'll get Sergeant Heath on the phone at once.
Do that, Markham. Oh, by the way, Mr. Stone, how long had you been sleeping, would you say?
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure. I guess I stopped reading about midnight. What time is it now?
2 a.m.
Well, what about it, man? Why the question?
You were reading in bed, of course.
That's right. I put on my pajamas, took a pill, and got into bed.
Did you now? Mr. Stone, do you always put your pajama coat over the shirt you wore today? You ought to be a little more careful. The collar's quite visible. You'd been out. Only came in a few minutes before Markham and I knocked. Where had you been?
Wouldn't you like to guess?
Yes. And wouldn't you like to know what I've guessed?
This is District Attorney Markham. Philo Vance says to call this the combination murder case. It opened with a completely conflicting situation. David Allen, former fiancé of Joyce Dixon, was found dead in his room at 10:15. And a nearby restaurant reported he had ordered a light snack at 10 o'clock. While the medical examiner is conducting his investigation, Vance and I have learned of the death of a man named Jones, Miss Dixon's gardener. My men report that Bartley Stone, business advisor to Miss Dixon, is at her home now. It is ours, moving.
Now let me see, my dear. This is quite a problem. Quite a problem.
I don't need you to tell me that. Listen, Bartley. I have an alibi for Dave Allen's death. I was with Vance. But I was at home when Jonesy was killed in his quarters.
Why did you kill him, my dear?
I kill him? Why should I kill him?
I don't know. But if you didn't, why send for me?
Now look, Bartley, let's not get cute with each other. I don't want any investigations around me. I can't take them, and nobody knows that better than you.
Well?
You've got to do something for me. If anybody asks you any questions, you can tell them that you were with me. But you met me as soon as Vance left me at the Golden Eagle nightclub. You were with me for hours.
Preposterous, my dear, preposterous. Vance and the district attorney were at my apartment when you phoned about Jones' murder. I've told you that.
Yes, but you also told me that Vance figured you weren't asleep at all, but had just come in. Okay, so you admit you just came in. You were with me. That's all there is to it.
I admit that sounds very good for you. Why should I lie for you?
For a very good reason, because I can send you to jail for mishandling my money if you don't.
You can send me to jail? My dear, where do you think you'll be when you do? All I have to do is talk, you know.
You won't talk, and you'll say what I told you to.
Now, Joyce, put down that ashtray. Put it down. We can discuss this reasonably.
You'll tell Vance you're with me, do you hear?
Now, Joyce, listen. Keep away from me. You and I can make a deal. Put that ashtray down.
You'll tell Vance we were together?
No.
Practically sent out an invitation for this, Bartley. You begged for it.
No, don't. No.
Hello?
Miss Dixon, this is Philo Vance.
Oh, hello, Mr. Vance. Rather late for a social call, and much too late for a business call, isn't it?
I'm just trying to make an appointment for breakfast with you. Can Markham and I pick you up at, say, 9:30?
I don't know why not.
No, but I'll wager you'd like to know what for.
Now, Markham, please stop concentrating. It's a beautiful morning, and we're on the way to the home of a very definite suspect, Miss Joyce Dixon.
Suspect in which murder, Vance?
Both murders.
She has a slight alibi for the time when Dave Allen was murdered. She was with you.
So it would seem. But I'm not certain she was.
Well, we know Allen came into his room and ordered something to eat at 10 o'clock and was found dead at 10:15. Or do we?
The murderer would like us to believe that, I'm sure. In fact, that might be the reason poor Jones was murdered.
Vance, you're going much too fast to suit me.
And much too slowly to suit me. Drop me at the corner of Miss Dixon's house, Markham. I'd like to go in there alone, if you don't mind.
I'll do it on one condition. Tell me when this case will be over, and why you think that Allen might have been killed long before 10 o'clock, at which time we think he called Joe's diner.
All right, Markham, I will. Wait a minute.
What is it, Vance?
I've just thought of something. You drop in on Miss Dixon, Markham. Stay with her all day if you have to, or get a police guard for her.
What's going on, Vance?
I'm going on to see Bartley Stone again. One piece of information, and by this evening, Markham, I think I can promise you, this will no longer be an unsolved murder case. Nasty cut on your head, Mr. Stone. What happened to you?
An accident, Vance.
I hardly imagined you'd done it on purpose. Mr. Stone, there's only one question I have to ask you.
By all means, sir. By all means. I'm quite at your service.
Thank you. You see, Mr. Stone, I believe that David Allen and the gardener were killed by the same murderer. And I think I know who that is.
Oh?
Oh. Tell me this one thing. Did you ever have dinner with Allen? Did you know anything about his personal habits?
I didn't associate with my employees, Vance. But I did have lunch with Allen several times. Did I tell you what you want to know?
Not yet. Tell me a little more about him. Things you do know.
He was quiet, reserved, conservative. He was a vegetarian, and he never drank anything but milk. Very healthy young man, sir. You'd think he'd have lived to be 100. Now have I told you what you want to know?
You most certainly have. And now I'll tell you something you might not want to know. By midnight tonight, you'll be in jail.
Don't get up, Miss Dixon. I'll answer the phone.
It's my house, Markham, or am I under arrest?
No, not yet, but I'll still answer the phone. Hello.
That you, Markham?
Yes, Vance, what are you?
I've just left Bartley Stone. Listen, Markham, is Miss Dixon there with you?
Of course. Why?
Ask her this question. I'll hold the phone. Ask her if Jones, the gardener, was ever in the house when David Allen was being served anything to eat.
Just a minute, Vance. Oh, Miss Dixon.
Well, what is it?
Vance would like to know whether your gardener ever saw your ex-fiancé, Dave Allen, have dinner at this house.
No, he never did. I didn't allow the gardener in the dining room. All right, so what does that make me, a snob?
I don't know yet. Oh, Vance.
Yes, Markham, I heard Miss Dixon. Tell her it doesn't make her a snob. Tell her it makes her a murderer.
About time you got here, Vance. What's the idea of having me held here in my own house?
That was my idea. It was to prevent you from killing anyone else, Miss Dixon.
Oh, really? And just who am I supposed to have killed?
Your ex-fiancé and your gardener. And I don't doubt that you might also try to kill Bartley Stone, which is one reason I thought I might have to confine him to jail for safekeeping.
Philo Vance, the great mastermind. You stand there and tell me I murdered a man who was killed at 10 o'clock at night, while I was with you at 10 o'clock. Oh, brilliant deduction, Vance. Don't understand how you do it.
David Allen wasn't killed at 10 o'clock.
Hmm?
The police believed he was because of that phone call made to Joe's diner. Only Mr. Allen didn't make that call. Your gardener did.
Oh, you were there and saw him, I suppose.
I didn't have to be there. You see, your gardener picked up the phone at your orders, and he told Joe's diner to send him some food. But he included in that food something that told me the whole story. He included a combination sandwich.
Very interesting. And that proves conclusively that I killed Alan.
It doesn't sound as if it would, but it does. You see, a combination sandwich consists of ham and cheese. Alan was a vegetarian, but your gardener didn't know that. Alan would never have ordered a sandwich with meat in it.
So Bartley Stone could have been the man making the call, establishing an alibi of his own. No?
No. Stone knew that David Alan was a vegetarian, and he isn't the kind of man who'd forget.
I'm not the kind of girl who forgets. You know, you really are brilliant, Vance. By the process of elimination, you figured I killed Alan, then killed my gardener so that he could never say he covered up for me.
Exactly. And right now, you're imagining you're going to kill me.
Oh. It's more than imagination. I'm going to do it. Right now.
Please put down that gun, Miss Dixon. Mine is pointing directly at you.
Markham, where did you come from?
I'll take that gun, young lady. And in answer to your question, I've been in the back of the drapes in this room. Vance asked me to be on hand.
I'm very glad I did.
Well, now you know I killed two men. I made the mistake of practically admitting it. Vance, what made you suspect me? Tell me that. It'll make me a little happier.
What made me suspect you? Merely the fact that you wanted me around the night David Alan was killed. You wanted it to be known that you were with me at 10 o'clock, at which time you had your gardener presumably establish the time of death. It was a little too rigged. Didn't strike me right.
That's fine. You get a hunch, I get a murder rap. Well, that's the way things go, I suppose.
I'd like to know one thing, Miss Dixon. Why did you kill your ex-fiancé?
He was going to turn rat. Tell what he knew about me. Just to convince me he wasn't such a goody-goody. And that was the end of him. Even though he didn't know it at the time.
Yes, Markham, that was the end of him. That also was the end of a faithful servant who tried to cover up a crime for Miss Dixon. And this is the end of the combination murder case.
And that's Philo Vance Detective from June 14th, 1949, with a combination murder case starring Jackson Beck.